Welcome to this week's edition of Flashback Friday, your opportunity to get some good review by listening to episodes from the past that Jason has handpicked to help you today in the present and propel you into the future. Enjoy.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show with Jason Hartman. The economic storm brewing around the world is set to spill into all aspects of our lives. Are you prepared? Where are you going to turn for the critical life skills necessary to survive and prosper? The Holistic Survival Show is your family's insurance for a better life. Jason will teach you to think independently, to understand threats, and how to create the ultimate action plan. Sudden change or worst case scenario, you'll be ready. Welcome to Holistic Survival, your key resource for protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Jason Hartman.
Welcome to the Holistic Survival Show. This is your host, Jason Hartman, where we talk about protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in these uncertain times. We have a great interview for you today, and we will be back with that in less than 60 seconds on the Holistic Survival Show. And by the way, be sure to visit our website at holisticsurvival.com. You can subscribe to our blog, which is totally free, has loads of great information, and there's just a lot of good content for you on the site. So make sure you take advantage of that at holisticsurvival.com. We'll be right back. It's my pleasure to welcome Gary L. Stewart to the show. He's got a very, very interesting story. He's author of a top-notch book that is getting a lot of attention lately, entitled The Most Dangerous Animal of All, Searching for My Father, and Finding the Zodiac Killer. An amazing, amazing story. Gary, welcome. How are you?
Jason, thank you for inviting me. I'm fine.
Good, good. Well, so... Wow, what an amazing story. So you were looking for your biological father, who I take it you obviously didn't grow up with and didn't know.
Right.
And then you found that he was actually the Zodiac Killer.
Right. It's quite a story. And
it sure is. But before you dive in...
Part of the reason...
Yeah. Just before you dive in, I want you to tell people... Depending on how old they are, they may or may not have heard of the Zodiac Killer.
Right.
So first I want you to tell us about who is that? What was the crime? Where was it? Was it San Francisco, I think, that area?
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. And what did he do? How did he kill? And how many victims?
So, yeah, the Zodiac Killer terrorized the residents of California, particularly Northern California, San Francisco Bay Area, in the mid to late 60s all the way through the middle to late 70s. He was a copycat, actually, if you look closely, of Jack the Ripper. And to this day, Jack the Ripper is the world's most notorious, still unsolved serial killer case. And second to that being the Zodiac Killer, America's version of Jack the Ripper.
Amazing. And so how many victims?
Five.
Okay,
five.
But how did he, I mean, that five isn't, you know, as serial killers go, it's not the most prolific necessarily. Now, granted, a lot of times with these guys, they don't know all the victims. They discover more victims years later.
Sure.
Even.
He certainly claimed many more. He claimed 37, but I believe it was all just a claim. There have never been any other ties to it. One unique thing about him is the motive, and you'll see that in very great detail in the book. Why he did what he did, why he selected lovers in lovers' lanes for the most part, with one exception, and that one exception was because he was an acquaintance of my father. So it's very different, and then there's actually a reason for why he stopped doing what he's doing, and why, you know, everyone says, you know, the Zodiac hasn't spoken in 40 years, because part of his signature was, after he committed his crimes, he would write taunting letters to the authorities and as well as the newspapers, saying, you know, kind of catch me if you can. I'm way more clever than you. You'll never find out who I am. And he would send these cryptic messages, these coded letters to the newspapers, and basically say, hey, if you crack this cipher, you will have my identity. And unfortunately, the first three ciphers that were sent to the San Francisco Bay Area newspapers, they were decoded, and he had a hidden message there, and the message went something like, I love killing man because it's more fun than killing wild game in the forest. After all, man is the most dangerous animal of all.
And that's the title for the book. Wow, yeah.
Right. And but the thing is, a couple weeks went by, and a couple high school teachers in the Bay Area solved that hidden message, and they published it. And he wrote another letter saying, by the way, have you cracked my cipher? Meaning, there's a you may have cracked a decoded message, but my identity is in that cipher. He said that over and over, and I've discovered my father's complete name in all three ways he ever wrote his name in three of those ciphers. It's like he wanted to get caught. He was just, you know, he knew he had them then. They were always going to, from here forward, be looking for a hidden message and not for his name.
Yeah, wow. Amazing. Amazing. So tell us about how you, so at what age did you start looking for your father, and what prompted you to do that, for example?
So I was raised in an adoptive home where my other sister was adopted as well, and my parents weren't, my adoptive parents weren't able to have children, or so they thought, until they had one 3 years after they adopted me, a natural child. But all my life, my parents were very honest with me about being adopted, and they loved me unconditionally, just as if I were their own. But I always wondered. I always wanted to know. You know, I wanted to know where I came from. And fortunately, I didn't have to go searching on my own. When I was 39 years old, just 12 years ago, a lady from San Francisco called my adoptive mother and said, "I am your son Gary's birth mother." That began the process. I immediately met her, flew out to San Francisco to meet her, and asked her who my father was. Her answer was, you know, the question she's been dreading for years. "Well, honey, it's been a long time, and I've been forced to forget these memories of my past with you and your father, but I think his name was Van. I was very young, and he was twice my age, and we were on the run from the law from San Francisco."
So she knew he was the Zodiac Killer?
No, she didn't. Oh. She had no idea at the time.
What did she think he was? Why were they on the run then, for another reason?
He was wanted for statutory rape of my mother.
When you say twice the age, I don't know what age she was, but yeah.
Yeah, that's okay. So I should go back. This was in 1962, a few years before the Zodiac killings. So she was 13 when they met, 14 when they married, 15 when they had me. They had made it all the way from San Francisco to New Orleans. I was born in New Orleans, and my father got my mother to go out and get a job as a barmaid at 15 years old because he was wanted fugitive from San Francisco. And so he couldn't use his ID to get a job. He just let my mother go to work as a barmaid. She would come home from her shift and find that my father had me locked up in a footlocker in an old trunk with the lid shut because he said he couldn't stand to hear it cry anymore. And that's when she started getting scared. And so at 4 weeks old, my father took me by train from New Orleans to Baton Rouge, and he got off the train and walked seven blocks up the main street here in Baton Rouge and abandoned me in a stairway landing in an apartment building. That was 11 o'clock in the morning. Fortunately, the building was occupied. No one was home, but at 4:30 that afternoon, a young lady came home and heard this baby crying and called the authorities. So for 2 months, I was Baton Rouge's baby John Doe. So here I am making the headlines in Baton Rouge. Who are the parents of this abandoned infant? And then they're making the headlines in all across the nation, you know, the ice cream romance. Where are they? The ice cream romance, because they actually met in an ice cream parlor. So I told my mother, when she told me the story, I said, you know, I don't think I want to find this character. I've got a great family and a great father here at home in Baton Rouge. So I didn't decide to search for about 6 months. When I did, in a twist of fate, my mother had remarried 11 years after me and my father. She had remarried a homicide inspector in the San Francisco Police Department,
What a strange turn of events, you know.
It's just getting good. It's just getting good, Jason. The whole book is like that. So he passed away in 98. My mother came looking for me in 2000 and found me in 2002. So When I asked my mother to help me find my father, she went to her husband, her former husband's friends in the SFPD, who found his file and said, Gary's father's name was Earl Van Best Jr. He was born in Wilmore, Kentucky. His social security number was this. But that's all we're going to share with you because there's information in the file that we're not going to share. Maybe I should have been warned. I don't know. But, you know, my mom says, you know, honey, think about it. I was a 14-year-old kid and he was 27 years old. Are we to be concerned? If he was that way, something was wrong anyway. That didn't deter me. I set out on a search to find this man and to thank him for abandoning me in Baton Rouge where I could be adopted by the Stewart family. My reunion with my mother was so fulfilling. I wanted to extend that same forgiveness and welcome him into my family. Over the course of the next year and a half, I found out that he was deceased and buried in an unmarked grave in Mexico City, that he drowned in his own vomit, and I still continue to run into roadblocks. I found out that he had three other children and had abandoned them in Vienna, Austria, and I reached out to contact them, but they insisted on me having some kind of proof that I was his son, the older son, so I needed that information from the SFPD, and they wouldn't get off of it. And my mother went to him one last time, and she said, Gary just needs to know. And they told my mother what was in that file was so heinous that it would destroy me. And they also said what was in my father's file would make what he did to me and my mother, rape and abuse, seem inconsequential.
Wow. Amazing. Just amazing. So I've got to ask you before we get to some practical tips that we're actually going to share with the audience here. I am very impressed that you would come out with this story. I mean, of course, mature people understand that every individual is completely different. The parents of Jeff Dahmer, for example, are not Jeff Dahmer. Okay.
Sure.
But I mean, do you get hate mail? Do people threaten you? Do they, I mean, of course this stuff happened a long time ago, but it seems like most people in your position would want to just kind of hide out.
You're right, and there's a reason I came forward. Right now, because it's been just 2 weeks, a little over 2 weeks since the book came out, and we had a lot of national, international publicity still going on. The book's been released in the UK now. What I'm getting the most of are negative comments from people who have been working, the amateur sleuths, the young guys who sit at home on message boards and have their own person of interest and want to name that person, and if anybody comes up with a relevant suspect that's not theirs, that they're going to attack them. As far as personal hate mail or whatever, not getting any of that. And I'll tell you why, because my story is a story of nature versus nurture. I had to share my story because of who I became. When I first found this out, I thank God, I've got a serial killer's DNA running through my blood.
Yeah, that DNA? I mean, I don't think that's hereditary, fortunately.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, everyone wants to know. Everyone I've talked to for the past 2 weeks wants to know, do I ever get these crazy thoughts? And what I can say for a fact is my father, I don't know, okay, and I'm not a forensic psychiatrist, but my father was, I don't believe he was born a natural-born killer. I believe he lost his father and mother, his father in a divorce to his mother, when he was a very young child, and his father was his hero, and his mother had some terrible morals. She had more men suitors in and out of her. My father would describe it to his cousins as a turnstile at a movie theater. He learned his respect or hate or rage for women from his mother. So my father's a victim of his nurture, and me, on the other hand, exactly the same case. Don't care what kind of evil we've all come from, if any. I can speak for myself. I was raised in a home where love, forgiveness, honesty, acceptance are tenets, the way to live your life. And I have no concerns whatsoever.
Amazing. Just an amazing story. Well, tell us what we can learn from this. I mean, it always amazes me whenever they catch a serial killer. I'll use Jeff Dahmer as an example again, because I, you know, remember seeing the interviews and all the neighbors saying, oh, he was such a nice neighbor. He was quiet and polite. And, you know, everybody says, you know, they had no idea. They were always, it's always that way with all of these stories, you know.
Sure.
Neighbors are in shock. You know, all the people around this person, you know, was just amazed. They can't believe it.
Exactly. So, you know, even Jason, even today, when we have some of these shootings at schools and in public places, there's always somebody that comes in after the fact and says, I could have suspected that. I knew there was something wrong. The problem is, I really believe some of these people want to be stopped. That's why they're sharing. That's why they're communicating.
Well, it's an ego thing. You know, they want to brag about this. These are their accomplishments, right?
Absolutely. And even in my own case, my father, his first cousin, who is my second cousin, has been wonderful to me and shared story after story. But what she tells me is, Gary, we sometimes blamed ourselves as kids that he ended up the way he ended up because we picked on him so much. He you know, we went swimming in Witherswash down in Myrtle Beach, and he didn't want to go. He wanted to sit in the beach house and read all this English literature. He was just that way. And we feel bad because we picked on him so much. People knew. Everybody knew, and it can be stopped. My advice is, you know, a friend of my wife's read the story in one night, and she told me today that she has not slept with her porch light off since, that it scared her to death. And I guess I don't read it that way, because I'm more into the story of hope in the nature and versus nurture. But I think there are signs. And I would encourage people, if you see something, if it just doesn't add up, speak up. We see it every day now, unfortunately.
That's it. We do see that, but we just don't know. You know, how do you know?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, looking back, I know my friends of my father and my family all can say, including my biological mother. She says now, granted, she was 14, 15, that there were signs, you know. And so I think it behooves all of us just to be aware. I mean, I don't think a perfectly mentally healthy normal person is going to appear as a perfect sheep or a wolf that's got sheep's clothing. I believe a sheep's a sheep, and you're going to know a wolf in sheep's clothing if you just pay attention.
So what else can we learn from these people? I mean, a lot of people don't realize that they don't realize there were signs until after the fact. You know, maybe a lot of us are living next door to a serial killer. You know, you just really don't know. Any other telltale signs we can learn, or, you know, just anything we can do to protect ourselves?
I think so. I think the BTK killer in Wichita, I guess Kansas, was operating about the same time that I discovered who my father was. And you know, I know the one thing he had he also was a Zodiac killer copycat. The one thing that he had in common with my father he was like the guy given a little bit of authority as a neighborhood patrol guy, making sure the grass height in your lawn wasn't too high.
All those super important things for power hungry people, right?
Right, power hungry people, yeah. And people who wanted attention and braggadocious, I guess, arrogant, just wanting to stand out and be set apart for some reason. And I guess maybe when they figure that being the neighborhood cop isn't all that, then there are other ways I'll get attention.
Yeah, I always found it that these people on homeowners association boards, presidents of homeowners association boards, they're like just, some of them are just power hungry nut jobs. I mean, they really are.
Yeah. We had elections on our homeowners association committee just a couple of years ago, and I'm like, I told my wife, I am staying away from that. But we had somebody volunteer that wanted to have it, right? The power thing.
Well, who knows what they got in their basement.
Exactly. That's right. But there are so many things we can learn every time one of these cases is solved, and every time, unfortunately, we see this play out in the morning news, that there are lessons to be learned, and it all comes down to mental health issues.
Wow, something else. Well, tell people where they can get the book. I mean, of course, it's on Amazon with 4-star reviews. You got 87 reviews already, and that's pretty quick.
That's not really bad,
yeah,
you know,
not bad
and.
At all.
It is available on Amazon. You can. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, all your local bookstores, and even Walmart. A friend asked me where to get one today, and my wife and I ran to Walmart and got one. But the book website is called www.themostdangerousanimalofall.com.
That's themostdangerousanimalofall.com. And Gary L. Stewart, what an incredible story, and thank you for sharing it with us.
Thank you so much, Jason, for having me on the show. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today for the Holistic Survival Show, protecting the people, places, and profits you care about in uncertain times. Be sure to listen to our Creating Wealth show, which focuses on exploiting the financial and wealth creation opportunities in today's economy. Learn more at www.jasonhartman.com or search Jason Hartman on iTunes. This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company, offering very general guidelines and information. Opinions of guests are their own, and none of the content should be considered individual advice. If you require personalized advice, please consult an appropriate professional. Information deemed reliable, but not guaranteed.